We're coming now in the book of Numbers to three quite extraordinary little chapters. And this doesn't appear anywhere else in any of the other books. It's the story of Balaam. And you might know the bit you'd all remember is about the donkey that speaks. Yeah. Well, you might be listening to one now. But anyhow, let's go on. This is an interesting little... This warns us to be careful when we're dealing with the Old Testament scriptures and not go too far. In 1967, a text inscribed in plaster was discovered at a place called Deir Allah in the Valley of Sukkot in biblical Gilead. So on the, as you look at the map, just on the right of the Jordan River. Just north of the Yabok River and about 8 kilometres east of the Jordan. Like the text we are about to read, it refers to a character called Balaam, the son of Beor. So this is archaeological discovery. It's been dated about 800 BC, well before the book of Numbers has been written, 400 years probably before it. And so it comes from a time prior to the Assyrian invasions of 734 and 721. 721 was the collapse of the northern kingdom. 724 was the first incursion of the Assyrian, that's Iraq really, into this area. A time when the population of the area in Gilead was largely Israelite. You know, the tribes were on the right-hand side as well as the left-hand side of the Jordan River. Now, Levine is a rabbi, and the main source of my study, not the only one, of course, but a very important source of it, he holds that it's likely that this story of that they discovered in 1967 was composed by an Israelite. Likely. And states this: rarely has the recent discovery of an extra biblical source outside the Bible had so direct a bearing on the interpretation of biblical texts. So we're reading a late story with a long tradition, and there's even a written record of the name way back in 800 BC. The story of Balaam in our book, Numbers 22 to 24... consists in poetic extracts, which could well come from the same place and period as the Deir Allah text. Poetry is usually a lot older than prose. Short, poetic, that's in all languages. Prose is a more recent development. Short little two-line poetic lines, as them sung usually, is very ancient. So the prose interpretations that you'll find in the book of Numbers in a minute are later than the poetic parts. That's a general principle, and it's universal across the board in ancient languages. It would appear from the poetry, and that's why we're going to have to make a bit of a distinction, that the Israelites in Gilead at the time were at home with a pantheon of gods. If you just read the poetry, the gods included El, the high god of the whole region, and that's the god featured in the Deir Allah text, El. There's a national god, Yahweh, and we're going to see some others as well. So they're not monotheist, the Israelites responsible for the writing of the poetic texts in our Numbers that's come down from a long time. The prose setting and commentary reveal a different religious mentality. They interpret the poems in the light of exclusive Yahwism, using the word Yahwism for the name for the worship of God. Keep in mind, however, that exclusive Yahwism and monotheism are not exactly identical. It's one thing to say, "You shall only worship Yahweh." It's another thing to say, there are no other gods except Yahweh. Do you get it? So In fact, that's the commandment, isn't it? You shall not have strange foreign gods before me. Implies that there are foreign gods, but you won't put them before me. I'm the important God for you. So you're still in a polytheistic world. You're just demanding exclusive Yahwism. So, they interpret the poems in light of exclusive Yahwism, which is certainly the position of the priestly writers who include the material in our Numbers texts. The main character, Balaam, gets rather a bad press in other parts of the Bible. Later in Numbers, we're told that Balaam was slain along with the Midianite kings. Chapter 31, verse 8. And you'll reference there to Joshua as well, chapter 13, verse 22. He's blamed for the Israelite apostasy at Baal Peor, which happens on the east side of the Jordan River in the book of Deuteronomy and so on. That's in 31:16, and also in the book of Revelation, incidentally. In Deuteronomy 24:9, we're told that he tried to curse Israel. So there's a lot of stories about him. But Yahweh turned his curse into a blessing. Look up Joshua chapter 24, verse 9 to 10, and you can find that there. This idea persists in the tradition. So he's not a goodie, this bloke. God help us. No, he was out to curse Israel and so on. In the book of Nehemiah chapter 13, verse 2, even in the New Testament, the second book of Peter chapter 2, verse 15, picks up the memory, the tradition, that this Balaam was a baddie, a prophet of a foreign nation who was anti-Israel. Now, it's important to note that apart from the fable, and it is a fable, of the talking donkey, which comes into our text, and I'm not going to spend much time on it, and you probably know it, and we'll see what it's about in a minute, which makes fun of non-Israelite seers. That's what that's there for. It's meant to get everyone bursting out laughing, like we sometimes do to other religions, which is not a good thing to do, really, but we tend to do it, like Catholics used to throw stones at the Protestants, its kids, and they'd call us Catholic. They're little poems. I've forgotten what they were now. You know them off by heart. So we'd have these little things going on. And in any case, it doesn't belong with the rest of the narrative. It's inserted. It's saying that the donkey knew what was going on, and Balaam, the great foreign prophet, didn't have the foggiest idea. So the donkey was smarter than the prophet. That's the point of it, and that's why all the Jews reading it would have a good old laugh. Of course, prophets in those other countries are just hopeless. They're donkeys, really. The image of Balaam presented in our chapters, these narrow little bits we're looking at, is entirely positive. Balaam is asked by Balak, the king of Moab, that's down on the eastern side of the Dead Sea. He's asked to curse Israel, but all he can do is utter words of blessing. And that's all he does. He's not a baddie at all. The king of Moab, that's Balak, sought out Balaam because he had an international reputation as an expert in cursing. So instead of getting Dean Martin, instead of getting Dean Martin to give the concert and swing around the pole and come in half drunk and sing a song for us, they got out and got this Balaam because his reputation is so good. He's even recorded an 800 BC document. So he is a real person, or a story about someone that was more general than the Bible. He was expected to use his special magical powers to communicate with the gods, to win the gods' favour, and to entreat them to deprive Israel of any divine blessing. However, as we will see, for this kind of expertise to work, he was good at getting the gods on side and inviting them into these little secret places. There must be divine powers willing to get involved. He couldn't do it, but if he could get the gods on side and either trick them or entice them, like Homer does that, doesn't he, with the gods of the Iliad and all this, get them in on side, they might utter a curse, and that's it. We've got them, because we've got a god. The immortal gods, they're fighting each other too, by the way. We might get a god on our side to organise this dreadful thing to happen to Israel. So, in the story included in your Numbers, no such god can be found. Balaam goes around looking for signs. Bits of wood that are in the wrong shape, colour here, a bit of blood or a dead bird to the left, or a feather 2 inches to the right, and all this is... And he goes around, he can't find any. Can't get the gods involved at all. All he can do is bless them, which is not the idea that Balak got him, paid him big money to get this thing. So, this material is included here because it comes from the Transjordan area and because it promises well for the Israelites as they prepare to enter the promised land. So wherever the story comes from, whatever its origins, and it's a bit around the place, they introduce it here because we're about to go into Jordan, across the Jordan, you get it? So this is a prophet from somewhere else with all the powers of the foreign governments coming in, etc. And all he can do is bless us. Wouldn't you like that to happen? So why don't we go in full of the blessing of God? That's why it's put here in the book of Numbers. It's significant that Moses isn't mentioned in these three chapters. So we're dealing with an intruded text for the reasons I've given you. So, how about if we start? Chapter 22, verse 2 to 6. Now, this is the text of Numbers. Now, Balak, the son of Zippor, Zippor means a bird, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. Moab was in great dread of the people because they were so numerous. Moab was overcome with fear of the people of Israel. Historical fact? I don't know, but entirely unbelievable. But anyhow, so we're dealing with a story. Moab said to the elders of Midian, that's down south, this horde will now chew up all that is around us as an ox chews grass. Ox chews up the grass of the fields. They've already beaten Sion, the king of the whoever it is, and Og, the king of Bashan, you know. So what are they going to do to us? Now Balak, son of Zippor, was king of Moab at that time. So he sent messages to Balaam, son of Beor, at Pethor. Now here you've got an interesting sentence, which is on the Euphrates in the land of the Ammonites. The Euphrates is nowhere near the land of the Ammonites. But you've got two opinions going on here. One is that Beor came from the Euphrates, and by that they mean northern Syria, because the Euphrates starts just north of Syria and goes all the way down into the Persian Gulf. Eh? So we're talking about that area. And there is another opinion that this... two stories, in other words, that aren't, they're not compatible, that he comes from the Ammonite area, which is to the right of the east of the Jordan River. And also another one is that he comes from Midian, I think. So there's a few. In other words, the stories weren't all... but they include them all, because they might be right. So they did that bit of that story and a bit of that story and a bit of that story. And when they put their sentence in, they have him coming from the Euphrates in the land of the Ammonites. They're coming from the Gulf of Carpentaria in the Canberra area. Well, that's interesting. Okay. They invite him, saying, a people has come out of Egypt. They've spread over the face of the earth. They've settled next to me, Moab. Come now, curse Arar. Curse this people for me, since they are stronger than I. Remember, they were also stronger. Exodus, did you do Exodus with me? They were stronger than the Egyptians when they were in Egypt, which is a bit iffy. Now they're stronger than the Moabites. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them from the land. I know that whomever you bless is blessed, and whoever you curse is cursed. because he's an internationally famous cursor. Wouldn't like to have him in my parish. Numbers 22 continues. Well, first of all, there's verse 7 to 11, which I won't read. The delegation goes out from Moab. They find Balaam, and they say, would he like to do it? I can't read all of it. And he consults God. Now, that's not Yahweh. He consults El, the high god of the Semite faith, the top dog. So he consults him. And then God, that's El, says to Balaam, you shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed. Now, that's good news if you're writing the Bible and you're an Israelite. It's bad news if you're a Moabite. And who wrote the Bible, the Moabites or the Israelites? So, Balaam rose in the morning and he said to the officials of Balak, go to your own land for Yahweh has refused to let me go with you. Can you see that whatever the story has, and we'll come to that in a minute, when the writers are putting the story, they're identifying Yahweh with El. Do you see that? Because they realize that there is Yahweh is El. They are the high god of the world, really, the creator. So they're identifying the two. But in the origins of the story, there's no identification. Go to your own land, for Yahweh's refused to let me go with you. So the officials of Moab rose, went to Balak and said, Balaam refuses to come with us. Scene one. Scene two. A second delegation is sent. Barak isn't happy with that. God came to Balaam and said to him, if the men have come to summon you, get up and go with them, but do only what I tell you to do. Says El. So, Balaam's got to do what the gods tell him. So, Balaam got up in the morning, saddled his donkey, that's the famous donkey, and went with the officials of Moab. Then comes the humorous story, which you might want to read and I won't. A little fable is introduced here as he enters the scene on the stage of our imagination. From another tradition stitched into the narrative, Balaam's donkey can see the angel of Yahweh, which is Yahweh. And Balaam, who's the famous seer, can't see anything. So the donkey goes, that's a horse, isn't it? Bah, I don't know what the donkey said. Anyone can make it? Thank you, Eeyore, good, that's what we needed. And Balaam is trying to get the donkey to get moving, and he's going, no, the donkey's not going to move because the angel of the Lord is there. And the donkey can see it as plain as your face, and the silly old seer, you know, the bloke who's a genius, can't see a thing. Well, that's a good laugh, wouldn't you think? Do you have to think it actually happened? Then Balaam tells Balak, in the next parts that I'm not going to read either, from chapter 22:36 to 23:6, Balaam tells Balak, the word El, God puts in my mouth, that's what I must say. Okay, you asked me to come, I'm here, but I'm not going to say anything that God doesn't tell me to say. Good. He then offers sacrifices to the gods and he goes around the camp looking for omens that might interpret God's will, like the Romans were great superstitious people. We aren't, of course. You don't read your palm and you don't read tea leaves and you don't look up the paper and find Aries. Ah, and then you find where you are and you know what's going to happen this week and you put all your faith in that. And do you? You don't bet on every possible damn thing that comes of porridge or Uncle Toby's oats or Helga, and now I get Helga bread because I found it's real bread. This is not an advertising, but the bread we were getting, then I found this Helga, it is real bread, it's worth eating, I think, and it seems good, and now you can win trips everywhere, and so I just rip it off and throw it in the bin and get on with eating the bread, for God's sake. And then other people say, well, if you're not in it, you won't win it. Okay, now, Numbers 23, verses 7 to 11 go on. Then Balaam uttered his oracle. This is great news. Saying, Balak has brought me from Aram, the king of Moab from the eastern mountains. That's the best place to... East is always good. The sun comes from the east. Wisdom comes from the east. The magi come from the east in the little story in Matthew's gospel. East is, of course it is, the rising sun. That's where it's got to come from. So he's in the mountains, way out of the east. Come, curse Jacob for me. Come, denounce Israel. And he says, how can I curse whom Baal has not cursed? How can I denounce those whom Yahweh has not denounced? How did he get to know about Yahweh? I don't know that he did know about Yahweh, but the people who wrote the Bible did, so they've got it in there in the story. For from the top of the crags I see him, the great seer. And we've already learnt that he can't see in front of his own nose. But anyhow, there he is, peering across history. And from the hills I behold him. Here is a people camped apart, unallied with other nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob or number the dust cloud of Israel? Let me die the death of the valiant. Let my end be like this. He sees a great nation spread across Gilead. Ooh, wow. And they're going to come crushing very soon across the Jordan, and they're going to slay every man, woman, and child in Canaan. Isn't that terrific? You're supposed to enjoy all this. Then Balak said to Balaam, what have you done to me? He said, I bought you to curse my enemies, and now you've done nothing but bless them. And his answer was, must I not take care to say what Yahweh puts into my mouth? He's a prophet, after all. He's not the source. Then the text continues. Balaam uttered his oracle, saying, rise, Balak, and hear. Listen to me, O son of Zippor. Baal is not a human being that he should fail, or a mortal that he should change his mind. Has he promised, and will he not do it? Has he spoken, and will he not fulfill it? See, I received a command to bless. He has blessed, and I cannot revoke it. He does not countenance harm to Jacob. He brooks no wrong against Israel. Yahweh, their God, you get it? Baal, but Yahweh, their God, is with them, acclaimed as the king among them. Baal, who brings them out of Egypt, because he's top, is like the horns of a wild ox for them. Surely there is no augury in Jacob, no divination in Israel. Jacob is promptly informed. Israel, what Baal plans to do. They're not into fishing around among the... And this is obviously the book of Numbers telling the people not to get involved in reading their palms and tarot cards and looking up the stars and everything. No, they have direct connection with God. Look, a people rising up like a lioness. Now you're talking. And rousing itself like a lion. It doesn't lie down until it says prey to devour and drinks the blood of the slain. Then, in Numbers 24, 25 to 30, Balak and Balaam go to a third spot. Balak's not satisfied. That one didn't work. This one didn't work. So he takes him somewhere else. Perhaps he'll see something in there. He's determined to get him to curse this blooming foreign group. And in Numbers 24, now Balaam saw that it pleased Yahweh to bless Israel. So he did not go, as at other times, to look for omens. He's being converted. But set his face towards the wilderness. And Balaam looked up and saw Israel camping tribe by tribe. Then the Spirit of God came upon him and he uttered his oracle. What a famous one. You've heard it before, but we'll look at it here. Now, in this third oracle, the Spirit of God comes down on Balaam so that he speaks now as a prophet of Yahweh. To this point, he's been seeing what is. Now he sees what is to be, looking far into the future. And they needed this encouragement before they dared to go across the Jordan. Now he sees what is to be. He speaks on behalf of the whole pantheon of gods. Ael, the chief god of the region. Shaddai, the mountain god. He comes from the mountains in the east. Shaddai means the god of the mountains. Elyon, the high god. And Yahweh, the god of Jacob or Israel. So he's bringing in the heavy troops now, four of them. And according, of course, to the biblical writers, they're all one. They're all our God. And the final blessing goes, and I think you know it, the oracle of Balaam, the son of Beor, the oracle of the man whose eye is open, the oracle of one who hears the words of Ael, that's God, Ael, who is privy to Elyon's knowledge, who sees the vision of Shaddai. Wow. This bloke's got all the credentials. Sleeping or with his eyes uncovered, how fair are your tents, O Jacob, your encampments, O Israel. Like palm groves that stretch far away, like gardens beside a river, like aloes that Yahweh has planted, like cedar trees beside the waters. Water drips from his boughs, and his seed grows like a near abundant water. His king shall prevail over Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. Ael, who brought him out of Egypt, is like the horns of a wild ox for him. He devours the nations that are his foes and breaks their bones. He shatters their loins. He crouches like a lion and like a lioness. Who can rouse him? Blessed is everyone who blesses you, and cursed is everyone who curses you. Sounds great. And then, concluding now, the last chapter 24, verse 4, 15 and the following. The oracle of Balaam, son of Beor, the oracle of the man whose eye is open, the oracle of one who hears the words of Ael, who's privy to Elyon's knowledge, who sees the vision of Shaddai, sleeping or with eyes uncovered. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star marches forth from Jacob. A meteor rises from Israel. He strikes the brow of Moab, the skull of the Shethites. No one's quite sure who they are, I have to tell you. Edom will become a land depopulated. Seir, which is the mountain area of Edom, depopulated by its enemies. While Israel marches triumphant, Jacob shall subdue them and support the survivors from Ar. Good stuff. Three chapters about Balaam, who's saying marvelous things about the future of this group of people who are about to cross the Jordan River and conquer everything before them.